Do you know where I was? He asks, when you slipped away at the training grounds. I pause. I take it you didn't go to Salloway's. I went to see a different vendor. He lifts his hand and gazes at his moniker. In a few seconds, Phoenix glides into the den with a very playful puppy trailing behind it. The tiny beast has a black nose, floppy ears, and white fur with black and chestnut-colored spots. It leaps and bounds after the mechadome. Phoenix stops in front of us. Raiken stoops and scoops up the furry, wiggling puppy, whose tiny tail wags as he licks Raiken's face and softly whines. Here. Raiken places the adorable creature into my arms. The puppy immediately tries to shower my face with kisses. He's yours, Raiken says gruffly. I bought him for you before you did your disappearing act. I know Secondborns aren't allowed pets, but I'll claim he's mine. I'm unable to speak for a few moments. Every ounce of anger flows out of me. You got me a puppy? I lower the long-eared face licker away from my chin. You said you wanted one. When did I say that? I ask breathlessly. I hold the incredibly soft fur baby to my chest and snuggle my cheek to the top of his head. The puppy begins chewing on my hair. You told me when the technician was fixing your ribs. Do you like him? He's a beagle. He's mine? I whisper with a tight voice. My throat suddenly hurts. Yes. Raiken's voice is soft. I was hoping he'd help with your anxiety. Thank you, I whisper. I lift my face and accept more kisses from the excited hound. What are you going to name him? I don't know, I murmur, my eyes blurring with tears. He's perfect. A smile develops on Raiken's lips, but only for an instant. Then it's gone, and his stern, forbidding stare is back. It makes me want to see him smile again. What about Cudgel? Raiken asks, since he's beating me with his tail. Rogue, I murmur, and rest against Raiken once more. Rogue. Raiken reaches over and pets the little hellion. Welcome to the family, little brother. The puppy puts its front paws on my heart, trying to climb up me. I wince as a sharp pain stabs through me. What's wrong? Raiken asks. Nothing, I grunt, trying to shift Rogue in my arms so that he won't stomp on my bruised chest again. My face twists in pain. Raiken takes Rogue from me and sets the rambunctious creature on the carpet. The tiny hound attacks Phoenix playfully. Raiken reaches his hand out, trying to grasp the hem of my shirt. I block his arm with my forearm. He scowls and reaches out again, saying, "Let me see." "I'm fine." "Then let me see," he replies, "or I'll pin you down and look. Your choice." "Pfft, like you could," I retort. He moves as if I've just thrown down a challenge. Leaning away, I thrust up my arms to block him, which aggravates my wounds. "Okay, I'll show you, but only if you agree not to overreact." His glare could melt ice. "Okay," I relent. "So maybe you don't have the stoic gene. Just try to remain calm." He nods and stares at the hem of my shirt. "Is that an okay?" I ask. "Roselle?" I sigh heavily. Grasping the hem of my dirty white shirt, I lift it over my head, peeling it off. Above my bra, a dark contusion shaped like an enormous ink drop spiders across my skin to my collarbone. Another one covers my bicep. "What did that?" Raiken reaches to touch me. Gently, he traces the raised welt. "Fusion mag?" I watch as his long finger traces the wound. "Fusion mag? How are you alive?" I'm not sure that he believes me. "I have a really good tailor." His angry scowl returns. "What does that even mean?" he demands. His fingers soothe my abraded flesh, causing goosebumps to break out. I shiver. "It means Clifton Salloway made me clothes with fabric that repels fusion mag and other energy pulses." I sweep my hair over my shoulder and show him my back. "How bad is this one?" Raiken sucks air between his teeth. Who did this to you? It's not what they did to me. It's what I did to them. You went to speak to your brother, he snarls. Raiken is so intuitive, it's almost scary. I should keep in mind how similar we are. I slip my shirt back on and pull my hair from beneath the collar, letting it spill over my shoulders once more. I shift and face him. I went to speak to Gabriel, but it was a setup. Assassins were waiting for me. I think Othala sent them. It's not a lie. They were waiting for me, and it was a setup. The fact that I was still successful in my goal of kidnapping Gabriel and bringing him to the Sea Fortress doesn't have to be mentioned. The assassins are dead, though. And your brother? He asks. I wasn't able to talk to him like I wanted. Again, not exactly a lie, just not the truth. Of all the stupid, irresponsible, don't tell me that if you found Ransom, you wouldn't try to speak to him. Raiken covers his face with his hands and scrubs it in exasperation. Ugh, he groans. You know that's not the same thing. My brother isn't trying to kill me. Why are you so angry? I'm here. I didn't die. Raiken removes his hands. There are so many reasons why I'm livid right now. I can't even name them all. And you're not fine. You're beaten up. Maybe I'm tired of seeing you hurt. You leave bruises on me all the time, I point out. It's true, but it's unfair, and I know it. That's different. That's training. I'm making sure you never lose your edge, that anyone who comes at you, you can destroy. I know, I murmur. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I'm just exhausted. The puppy attacks my toes, trying to pull off my damp socks. I reach down and lift him in my arms. Thank you for Rogue. I lean back against Raiken's chest, petting my beagle's floppy ears. After a few minutes, Raiken's anger ebbs. His chest softens beneath my cheek. The next thing I know, I'm being lowered into my bed. I must have fallen asleep. The blanket settles over me, and Raiken begins to back away. Raiken, are you leaving?
No.
Go to sleep. Bombardment by puppy kisses might be the sweetest way to wake up. I've only spent a few days with Rogue, but I'm hopelessly in love with him. I help him off my bed and hurry to change so that I can take him out to the garden. Outside, my halo stingers wander with Rogue and me around the topiary bushes and shade trees. The second-born son stops supervising the pruning drones to kneel and greet my curious puppy. Having been a pariah most of my life, I appreciate the sudden chattiness and ease with which the second-born gardeners speak to me. I feel different, like maybe there's more to life than horror, violence, and lethal power struggles. I think what I'm feeling is hope. It scares me. I wander near the cliff. The wind whips my hair. Rogue, in my arms, nips at it. The tide's going out, which means I can visit the Sea Fortress and maybe see my brother. I'm anxious for news of how he's doing. Belmora hasn't sent me any messages since our last meeting. I keep telling myself that she's under a lot of stress, taking care of Gabriel. He was in an awful state the last time I saw him. I wish I could help her. I set Rogue down, and we wander back toward the rows of roses and shrubbery. Do you want to get some breakfast? I ask him. He wags his tail, puts his two front paws on my shin, and begins whining. Oh, you want me to pick you up again, do you? I reach down and scoop him up. As I straighten, Raiken rounds the hedgerow near me. I grin. Good morning! To what do we owe the honor of your presence? I ask, trying to sound surprised. I'm not. Ever since Raiken gave me Rogue, he's been with me just about every waking minute. I'm not sure if it's by his own volition or if he's been ordered to stay with me, but he sticketh closer than a brother to me now. Closer than mine ever did, anyway. The corners of his lips twitch, as if he wants to smile back but won't allow himself to. How's our boy? He asks, approaching. Rogue spots Raiken, and his tail starts wagging wildly. He barks happily and wiggles to get free of my arms. He's a handful, I reply, and by the look of how happy he is to see you, I'd say he has horrible taste in friends. I set Rogue down, and he bounds toward Raken. She's so mean, isn't she, boy? Heartless. The firstborn star lifts Rogue and allows the little monster to lick his clean-shaven face. We eventually sit and lay back on the grass, letting Rogue crawl all over us. I giggle when he steps on my cheek. Turning so his paw doesn't trample my eye, I find Raken staring at me. He's riveted. He leans forward, his lips near mine. My breath catches. Raken takes my hand, and his thumb rubs over my crown-shaped birthmark. I glance at it, and suddenly cold fear trickles through me. I sit up. The puppy bounces off my lap onto Raken. I scrub the back of my hand with my fingers, trying to rub away my moniker's golden light. Maybe it's the sunlight, I tell myself. I hold my hand at different angles, but its color doesn't change. I choke, scrubbing harder, raking my hand along the grass. I lift it again. A gold sword. I search Raken's face. He stares back at me, his expression unreadable. What have you done? I snarl accusingly at Raken. The betrayal I feel is horrific. His jaw tightens, but he doesn't deny anything. He just stares back at me. What have you done? I scream. Raken doesn't even flinch. You killed him! You killed my brother! He sets Rogue aside and hauls me toward him. I'm sobbing and resist him, but he's incredibly strong. You killed him! I sob against his chest. You killed him! I repeat it over and over in harsh, hacking breaths. Hot tears wet my cheeks. Raken holds my head firmly against his chest with one hand. His heart thumps wild and loud in my ear. A shadow falls across us. Through tear-blinded eyes, I realize someone is standing next to me. A girl, breathing hard. Her face is red, and she's crying. Quincy, I exhale her name. You have to come now. She's asking for you. Distress puckers Quincy's brow as she reaches for my hand, tugging me in desperation. Please, she's going to jump. You have to come. Her long blonde braid whips the air wildly. Nightmarish fear is etched into every line of her face. Who are you? Raken demands from the girl. He won't let go of me. Quincy sinks to her knees. He was only supposed to take a little. The Atom told her to give him only a few grams a day, but he found the medicine. He took it all. She chokes on a sob. He got so sick, and he turned blue, and we couldn't get him to breathe. He wouldn't breathe. Agony and sorrow shine in her red-rimmed eyes. She needs you. You have to come. I put my hand against Raken's chest and push with all my might. Blindly, I stumble to my feet. Quincy takes my hand, and we run in the direction of the sea fortress. Soft, yipping barks follow behind me. I turn back to get Rogue, but Raken has already collected him and is only a few paces behind. I sprint ahead. The sandbar is still covered by water, but the tide is going out. I wade into the waist-deep surf. I'm soaked by the time I reach the stone walls of the sea fortress. The sentry guards posted outside appear not to know what's transpiring within. I allow them to scan my moniker, and then I'm past them, racing across the high-walled courtyard. The guards won't let Raken through, and he shouts for me to wait, but I keep going. Once inside, I accost the first person I can find, an elderly sun-faded secondborn carrying a multi-tiered tray full of intricate cakes and pastries. I latch onto her arm, nearly spilling the tray. How do I get to the top of the tower? I demand. Her eyes widen, and the lines around them stretch. She starts to answer me, but Quincy's small hand on my arm pulls me forward. She navigates hallways, a labyrinth of stone walls, with me in tow. A winding staircase with carved wooden railings spirals up the middle of the tower, its hundreds of flagstone steps covered by aqua-colored carpet. I move toward the staircase, but Quincy yells, "No, wait!" Near the staircase are several small hover vehicles, some of them rusted around the edges. Most look as if they are whimsical novelties made for children, resembling miniature ancient sea vessels, but a couple are larger, big enough to carry adults. Quincy goes to a two-seater parked by the wall, near a balustrade carved in the shape of a cresting wave. She climbs onto it and activates the controls. The vehicle's dragon-shaped masthead comes to life, its eyes glowing yellow, and the vehicle lifts off the floor. I climb onto the glittering golden seat beside her, and she launches the vehicle forward, driving it up the steep stairs. We follow the staircase in a dizzying, ever-climbing corkscrew, passing stained glass windows and floors with scores of doors at breakneck speeds. Quincy urges the vehicle on ever faster, slowing only when we arrive at the top floor's landing. I look down over the railing at the ground floor far below. A commotion is forming. People are gathering there. Reagan is one of them. He probably bullied his way in here, using his connection to Grisham or the Virtue as a threat. I rush to the open door at the end of the hallway. Sunlight shines in through the stone terrace overlooking the sea. White curtains flap. The breeze is warm. I'm sweating from the run and wet with salt water, but I shiver anyway, as if chilled to my marrow. Gulls squawk and cry outside. Balmora stands barefoot on the wide, lichen-dappled wall facing the cloudless blue sky. Her beautiful hair is long and loose, flowing past her shoulders and over her white nightgown. In the bed at the other end of the room, my brother's body lays against the white damask pillows. My scalp tingles as my hairs rise in horror. Someone has taken off Gabriel's leaded glove. Apart from his moniker's golden light, it's obvious that he's dead. His ashen skin sags lifelessly over his hollow cheeks. I ache, a stabbing pain in my chest. Bile rises in my throat, and my knees weaken. Hope is a vicious thing. I allowed myself to feel it, and now it's bent on destroying me. My ears ring as blood pounds through them. Beside me, Quincy pants hard, her chest heaving. Wringing her hands, she implores me with her eyes to do something. I trudge heavily toward the stone terrace, weighed down by fear, my steps echoing on the flagstone floor. Balmora, I say gently. Wind lifts her hair. Nothing ever changes here, Balmora says flatly, without looking at me, from her position on the wall overlooking the sea. Clouds roll in and roll out. Waves crash in and slide out. On and on, day after day, year after year. And I'm always here, alone. That never changes either. I hate this place. Please come down, I beg. He said it has to be this way. It has to be what way? I ask apprehensively. Gabriel was sick, out of his mind. Balmora leans forward a little. I consider rushing her and pulling her off the ledge, but the risk that she'll fall is too great. I inch closer. Balmora turns and gazes down at me. Wind lifts her hem and stirs her hair. Her waving gown reminds me of the flags that top each tower of the fortress. He said he couldn't stop your mother, but you can. It's like she's in a trance, emotionless, withdrawn. Stop her from what? From taking over the world with her monsters. What monsters? I ask. Balmora's foot moves, and her heel now teeters off the edge of the wall. I reach out to her, gesturing for her to take my hand and climb down. Don't, Balmora, I beg. We can change the world together, you and me. He said, tell Roselle to follow the crow to the trees in the sea. Kipson Crow? Did he mean Agent Crow? The sound of another hover cart crashing into our abandoned one rattles the air behind us. Reagan calls my name, and I hear a few of Balmora's attendants with him. I want to scream at them to leave, but I don't dare take my eyes from Balmora. I don't know what he meant, she drones. He made me promise to tell you, and then, he said, I could join him. Her dazed eyes shift to the young girl next to me. Goodbye, Quincy, Balmora whispers, and steps off the ledge. Chapter 17. The Air. I lurch forward, hoping to grab Balmora. but she's gone. A strangled sob comes from Quincy beside me. Screams tear through the air from the second-born attendants behind us. I force myself to look over the edge, hoping to find her clinging to a ledge. But the tide is out, and the stones that support the base of the fortress are uncovered. Balmora's body is a mangled mess on the rocks far below. The wind beats my hair against the sides of my face. I turn away and catch Quincy before she can look over the balcony wall. "Don't," I whisper, holding her to me in a hug. I can't tell which of us is shaking worse. Quincy whimpers softly, the quiet crying of a girl who has been taught not to show her sorrow. I gaze toward the tower. Raken is standing on the threshold to the balcony. By the grim expression on his face, I think he witnessed what happened. With long strides, Raken crosses the balcony alone and peers over the low wall. Rogue isn't with him, and I wonder, numbly, where my puppy is. Raken's expression is blank, betraying nothing of what he's thinking. Alarms peal, distant at first, but growing steadily closer. Death drones converge around us, rising to hover around the balcony. Their bone-jarring tones rattle my teeth. Raken gets between me and them. My halo stingers arm and behave aggressively toward the death drones. The air grows foul with the noise of drones. Raken's physical presence buffers me from the chaos. His shoulders arch around me like a shield. Carefully, he herds Quincy and me back inside the tower, away from the death drones. The halo stingers drift with us. Armed Exo and Ayano guards enter the tower bedroom. Balmora's second-born attendants flutter around, some crying. The pit of my stomach aches when I cast a glance at Gabriel again. I've been wrong about so many things, but especially him. I can't decide if he was noble or a coward. The one thing he is now is gone.
"This way."
Raken directs me to leave, but we're stopped by the guards. Using his moniker, Raken contacts Dune, and moments later, the leader of the security team gets orders from my former mentor to bring me to the Halo Palace. "Quincy comes with me," I growl, trying to hold back my tears. It's strange, this ache. If I could pinpoint its source, I might be able to do something about it. But it's all-encompassing. We're escorted from the tower. On the way out of the fortress, Raken collects Rogue from the lap of a middle-aged second-born woman with a gap between her teeth. The puppy is completely passive, in the grip of a serious nap. I want to bury my face in his fur, but I dare not touch him. I'm not good at loving. I'm only good at killing. Death. Destruction. "Sad to see him go," the woman says with a grin. In my daze, I mistakenly think she means Gabriel. But then she holds up the puppy and hands the bundle of love to Raken. He nods, and we cross the shallow water over the sandbar to a waiting aircraft. Inside the airship, I huddle next to Quincy. Raken sits beside me. We're so close that our thighs touch. I still hear my heart in my ears. The puppy sleeps soundly on his lap, intermittently wagging his little tail. Raken watches me. Shame heats my cheeks. I should never have accused him of murdering my brother. Gabriel did that himself. All I want to do is lay my head against Raken's shoulder and sob for the brother I once loved. That, Gabriel, was worthy of my tears. But I know my brother wasn't that boy anymore. "I'm sorry I accused you," I croak. "I thought..." I look away so I won't cry. Raken's warm fingers close over my hand.
"Not a poor assumption, given what I've said to you in the past."
He squeezes my hand.
"How long?"
he whispers. I know what he's asking. How long has my brother been at the fortress, right under his nose? "Since the night you gave me Rogue," I reply.
"Who knows?" he asks.
I indicate Quincy with a dip of my chin. Her cheek rests against my shoulder.
"Quincy,"
he beckons. The girl doesn't lift her head, but her arm around mine grows tighter.
"How did Gabriel come to be in the Sea Fortress?"
Her voice is monotone and distant. "Do you mean the dead man?"
Yes, Raiken replies. I don't know. I only found him like that this morning, she lies. Secondborn Commander was on the wall of the balcony. She was distraught, so I ran to get Roselle, hoping she'd be able to help.
Do you know who the man was? He asks.
She shakes her head. His moniker says he's a sword, but I didn't look at him closely.
No one can know what we've done. Now that I'm firstborn and the heir to the sword, I might get off with some ridiculously light punishment, but Quincy could be killed for helping to bring Gabriel and Balmora together. I can't let that happen. We stick to her story or she dies.
Quincy, Raiken says softly, did you know that this puppy is magic?
Quincy side-eyes Rogue, then looks at Raiken. His face shows no hint of humor.
It's true. Nothing bad can happen to you while you're holding Rogue. He's special like that. Do you want to try it and see?
She looks back at Rogue. Raiken lifts the puppy, holding his little warm body out to Quincy. She doesn't move at first, but then her arm slips from mine, and her small, shaking hands take the furry creature and bring him to her chest. She presses her cheek to the top of his head, and Rogue's floppy ear caresses her skin. A silent tear slips down her face. Our aircraft touches down on a hover pad connected to the floating halo. Raiken keeps everyone at bay from Quincy and me. With his arms locked around us, he escorts us inside. The guards here seem different, and the reason isn't immediately apparent until we get to the first security checkpoint. The hostile, suspicious stares that normally greet me have changed to surprise and open curiosity. The golden light of my moniker means I'm now treated with deference. By the time we reach Dune's apartment, I'm trembling. My skin is chilly. I keep replaying everything in my mind, questioning my decisions. If I'd gone to Balmora and pulled her off the wall before she had a chance to tell me Gabriel's message, she wouldn't have been able to jump. If I had stayed with her and helped her convince Gabriel not to take his life, they'd both be alive. I'm shaken from my daze to find Dune in front of me. His look of concern is genuine, but it's concern for me, not for Gabriel or Balmora. He doesn't share the pain of my brother's loss. Dune may try to comfort me, or he may not, but one thing is true. He wanted this. This is the best outcome the Gates of Dawn could have imagined. But I am unraveling. I feel as though if you pulled a frayed piece of me, I'll unwind into ribbon.
The Virtue has been alerted, Dune says. He understands that Balmora is dead and that it's confirmed suicide. He's going to want to know what she said before she jumped.
She gave me a message from Gabriel, I reply. I sound distant, even to myself.
What was the message? Dune asks.
She said Gabriel wants me to follow the crow to the trees in the sea. Dune's expression grows more intense.
Do you know what she meant by that?
No, I reply, but the only crow I know is Agent Crow. A woman's shrieks echo in the corridor outside Dune's apartment. He turns to look, and the door is thrown open by a disheveled woman. Her long blonde hair is half set, as if she were interrupted in the middle of grooming. Clad only in a long jewel-colored robe, Adora storms into the drawing room.
Where is she?
The Virtue's wife howls, and then her eyes fall on me.
You! What have you done?
Her voice is high-pitched, overwrought. I shudder at the snarl on her beautiful lips.
My daughter would never kill herself. She was too strong for that. You killed her.
Adora thrusts her finger at me. Deep lines of sorrow appear around her mouth. My head shakes involuntarily.
She was my friend, I whisper.
Hot tears fill my eyes.
I tried to save her, but she... Liar!
Adora's agony shimmers. Tears drown her eyes. She lunges forward to slap me, but Raiken captures her and thrusts her arms behind her.
Let go of me!
She jerks and twists, but Raiken easily holds her. He nods his head to the faded Virtue's bodyguards,
who have trailed in after her. They come forward to hold her off. Then the Virtue storms into the room, tight-lipped, flanked by his personal bodyguards.
Adora.
He tries to hug her. She wrenches away from him.
You promised me that if I agreed to keep her locked away in the Sea Fortress, nothing bad would ever happen to my baby. You lied. You're a liar.
Adora spits viciously at her husband.
You're all liars.
The Virtue motions to his bodyguards. Take the fated Virtue back to her apartments, he says. Call for a physician. Have her sedated. Gently but firmly, the Exo guards pull Adora away. Her wailing and threats of retribution recede, but the air remains stained with them. The next few hours are complete chaos. The Virtue paces, grilling me with questions about Balmora's death. Both Quincy and I present the facts of her death without revealing the treasonous part about arranging Gabriel and Balmora's reunion. Most of the questions he asks us are about things I pretend not to know. Ignorance, as a defense, is weak and unacceptable to the Virtue. I fear for Dune's furniture as the brutal despot crashes around the apartment, laying waste to all the most fragile appointments.
You were supposedly her friend, he rages,
almost toppling over a delicate table and sending an iron bowl filled with orbs crashing. The noise feels like slaps to my already taut nerves as his anger escalates from vein-popping to murderous. We were friends, I reply with a distinct lack of emotion, not because I'm unemotional, but because I forced them all down. But we're also transitioned secondborns. Relationships cannot be intimate. It's unacceptable to form deep attachments to anything outside one's duties. I use the law as a fallback. If they're going to create ridiculous rules, I'll throw them back in their faces.
You expect me to believe you're a robot? He asks. I've seen you fight. Your passion is why you excel, not your detachment.
I'm stunned for a moment, not sure how to defend myself from an accusation that's so true. Movement by the door draws my attention. Two firstborns from the Virtue's administrative team creep into the room. Both are young, lithe females, wearing terrified expressions. The one with the Virtue-faded moniker inches forward and interrupts the Virtue's scathing tirade. Excuse me, Clarity Bowie? Her timid voice quivers. He whips around at the disruption.
What is it? He bellows.
Exos found this in Secondborn Commander's tower room. She holds up a palm-sized hologram recorder. It contains a message from your daughter.
Show it, he roars.
But, Your Excellence, it's a very private kind of...
Play the bloody thing!
Spittle flies from the Virtue's mouth. The woman scurries forward, placing the recorder on the floor in the space between them. She activates the message. Holographic light projects up from the cylindrical metal base. Balmora's image appears. Hello, father, she says in a brittle, condescending tone. She's wearing the white nightgown she died in. Her hair, beautifully mussed as if she has just woken up, frames her tear-stained cheeks. Puffy eyes attest to her crying. She is perched on the edge of the bed in the Fate of Seas tower. Gabriel's corpse is visible behind her, resting against damask pillows. It may come as a shock to you, but I've been in love with Gabriel St. Sismode since I was very young. And he loved me. We kept it a secret from you and Mother, not by choice, but because you and your perversions forced us to. Gabriel has always been kind and gentle. A man who hated being the heir to the cruelest fate of the Republic. Unlike you, Father, he never thought my being secondborn was a curse, or that it made me inferior. He loved me, despite my birth order. We were going to change the world together, he and I. But now it's too late. He's dead, and I'll be joining him soon. So I won't waste much more of your time with my insignificant prattle. I know how you hate that. Gabriel made me promise I'd give you a message from him.
He said his mother is set to bring a wave of war and terror to your shores, the likes of which you've never seen. He said there was no way for him to stop her. He believed that only his sister is cunning and strong enough to do that. So he's stepping aside as the heir to the Fate of Swords. He took his own life so that Roselle could take his place. Bitterness shows on her face. She swallows hard. Personally, she growls through gritted teeth, whatever monsters Othala is bringing, I hope they destroy you and your entire dynasty. Goodbye, father. May your death be long and painful. The hologram projection blinks out. The Virtue's mouth is unhinged, resembling the severed head from the bronze statue in the Trial Village, locked in its last moment of horror.
She's mad, he whispers.
The Virtue clears his throat.
If Othala wants a war with me, she'll get a war.
He points at me.
I'll see that you become the sword, Roselle. You'll lead the Fate of Swords. Second-born soldiers will follow you, not your mother. After all, you were one of them.
To the two trembling assistants, he barks.
Assemble all the clarities of the Fates Republic, except for Swords. I want a meeting today. Roselle shall have a private suite in Upper Halo. I need her close to me at all times. Move.
The assistants scatter. I'm herded out of Dune's apartment. Quincy and Rogue get diverted by a pair of the Virtue's assistants. Before they go, the assistants assure me that they'll take Quincy to my new apartment to await me. Dune and Raken flank me as we pass through security and into corridors I haven't seen before. The hallways don't make sense at first. The outside of the hovering structure appears to be hollow, but to my complete amazement, it isn't. The architecture is circular, but it's solid throughout, with surfaces that give the illusion of sky. Arriving at the Virtue's command post in the center of the Halo, I realize that Upper Halo is a massive airship. I can't imagine what it's like flying a building, but I'm certain that my Class 7 pilot's license doesn't cover it. Inside the war room, the Virtue argues with Dune over strategy for the meeting he intends to hold with the other Clarities. Eventually, he informs the other Clarities that my brother has taken his own life and that I have elevated to firstborn status. Holographic images of the Clarities extend jovial congratulations. Through all of it, I nod in acknowledgement, but say nothing. All the Clarities, except for my mother, have been apprised of my brother's death. I steel myself for the virtual meeting with Othala, but nothing could have prepared me for her appearance when her holographic image alights in front of us. Seated behind her glass desk in her Sword Palace office, she slouches in her seat with a cocktail in reach. Her red-rimmed eyes stand out in the light of the holographic image. She looks as if she hasn't changed her clothes in days. Her hair is limp and oily. Deep lines of grief carve the sides of her mouth and line her forehead. Her sorrow causes my heart to bleed anew. I have come to despise my mother, but something inside of me is still crushed by her sorrow.
Return my son to me, and I won't torture you, Fabian, she says, her voice deep and raspy, her words slurred. Do it now, and I'll give you a quick death.
She lifts the fat tumbler to her lips, drinking a large gulp.
You're in no position to. I'm not finished, you blubbering man-child, my mother screeches. She lurches to her feet. Send me my son's murderer, Roselle, so I can eviscerate her myself.
Then, and only then, will I not pluck out your eyes and feed them to my Maginots.
You've gone insane. How dare you speak to me?
I dare, you pompous ass. You won't last a day against me now. Fabian ignores her threats.
No one had to murder Gabriel, Othala. He did it himself. The first thing he's gotten right in his miserable life. Now we have a competent heir to Swords.
You're blind and stupid, Fabian, my mother replies. Roselle will always be 10 steps ahead of you. I'm actually doing you a favor, and you don't even know it.
send her to me along with my son's body.
I don't think so. I need the right Saint Sismode on the Throne of Swords to stabilize the Fates and quell the open rebellion. With Roselle in charge, every second-born sword soldier will leap to do her bidding. They'd follow her off a cliff. She's one of them. No one will lift a finger if you go against her. Your army will turn on you in an instant.
And she's your best hope? Othala laughs derisively. You're a fool. You'll never be able to control her. She'll run circles around you, and you won't even know it. Won't you, Roselle? Just like you did by aligning with the Rose Gardeners right under our noses. You had one job. All you had to do was die. If you had, Gabriel would be alive. This is all your fault. Her words tear open my invisible wounds, but I don't rise to her drunken logic. Instead, I ask, who are your monsters, Mother? She smiles sadistically. Oh, you'll find out, she rages. You'll all find out. And stop calling me Mother. I never wanted you. I demanded artificial insemination so that I wouldn't have to touch your father again. Did you know that? Did you know that every moment that you grew inside of me was torture? Every time I look at you, all I see is Kennet. I couldn't wait for you to transition so I could get rid of your pathetic face. You look just like him, an evil little spawn. I had fun planning your death. The fusion snuff pulse was supposed to be the perfect cover, but I was betrayed. Dune protected you. He joined the Virtue and let you live. He's a coward, your mentor. But now, killing you seems too kind, Roselle. No, I should keep you alive long enough for you to understand what it's like to be married to someone you despise. Maybe I'll have you give me an heir to raise before I cut your heart out. How does that sound? She cackles with glee. I have just the man in mind. I think he'd be up to the challenge, too. My stomach roils. I fear she means Agent Crow. I'm sorry that you were hurt, Othala, I reply, but I think you know me well enough by now to see that I have no intention of ending up like you. How dare you pity me, Roselle? You think you're better than me? I'll make sure you know what a disgusting little insect you are. I bury any outward sign that I'm affected by her drunken raving. Inside, though, I grieve for her and loathe her at the same time. Othala looks back to the Virtue. Send Roselle to me, or pay the price. Her holographic image winks out. The Virtue wears a stunned expression. He expected my mother to cower on her knees, begging him to spare her life. The fact that she didn't confirms that she's in a much stronger position than anyone imagined. The Virtue calls for his advisory council, including Dune, Walther, Clifton, and Grisham, along with Grisham's closest advisors, which includes Raken. Most of the Virtue's inner circle now are either Gates of Dawn or Rose Gardeners, or they're simply the inept, privileged offspring of other members of the aristocracy. The Virtue is surrounded by his enemies, and he doesn't even know it. I almost pity him. As the advisors assemble, Grisham enters with Raken. The Virtue-fated firstborn shows no outward sign of grief over the passing of his sister. I wonder whether he will blame me too, or has Raken explained what happened? I'm about to ask him when I hear a deep voice say my name from the doorway. My heart flutters as my eyes meet Hawthorne's. Dressed in an exo-military uniform, he's a striking figure. I bite the inside of my cheek. Striding directly to me, Hawthorne offers a military salute. Firstborn Sword, he greets me, using my new title. As your acting First Lieutenant, may I offer you my condolences for the loss of your brother. His formality reminds me not to show weakness. Thank you, I murmur, feeling my cheeks heat. He kneels on one leg, bowing his head. I'm here to pledge my loyalty to you as your acting right hand. When he looks up, I nod in acknowledgement. Hawthorne rises, towering over me. It's essential that we discuss nominations and appointments to your Heritage Council. Do you have a private space available for this discussion? Raiken pushes his way between Hawthorne and me.
No one trusts soldiers from the Fate of Swords, he says, especially those in the aristocracy. How can anyone be sure that your loyalties don't lie with Othala St. Sismode?
Both Hawthorne and I are startled by Raiken's insinuation.
As acting First Lieutenant, Hawthorne barks in a clearly military tone, I'm here to swear my allegiance to Roselle St. Sismode, the Firstborn Sword.
His agitation is palpable. My loyalty is to her, first and foremost. It's my duty to enact the protocols between the Heritage Council and the heir to the Clarity of the Fate of Swords. You will not interfere with that duty, Star, or you will be subject to our laws.
Raiken isn't intimidated. He goes nose to nose with Hawthorne. She doesn't go anywhere alone with sword fates.
She is a sword fate, Hawthorne counters, and she has a duty to uphold.
I can speak for myself, I interrupt.
Thank you, Firstborn Winterstrom, for your concern. I'll discuss my future counsel with Acting First Lieutenant Truegrave. Alone.
I pull Raiken aside for a private word.
Raiken, you know I'm capable of handling myself with Hawthorne.
Never forget that he has had divided loyalties in the past, he insists.
I want to dismiss what he's saying, but it's true. I'll keep it in mind. To diffuse his anger, I place my hand on his heart. His rough fingers cover mine. It does something to me. My belly flutters. Surprised by my response to his touch, I pull my hand away and drop my eyes.
Thank you for your advice, I manage.
I request a private room to meet with Hawthorne. A Firstborn XO shows us to a lounging room filled with soft, fat chairs. Coverage of the Secondborn Trials training camps plays on every screen in the room. It makes me want to scream and throw things at the walls, but I keep my frustration locked down. Hawthorne already thinks I'm a fate traitor. I don't want him to think I'm a raving lunatic as well.
How are you?
Hawthorne asks, taking a seat. I sit in a chair next to his. He doesn't take my hand, doesn't touch me.
I don't know.
I swallow hard against the lump in my throat. Numb, I guess. Scared, confused. I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. I'd hoped that Gabriel would somehow come through his addiction. You warned me that he wouldn't.
I should have listened to you.
What can I do to help you with your changeover to Firstborn? He asks.
I have some experience with it. It takes a while to get used to it.
His eyes soften. They have a silver tint to them in this light.
I don't plan on getting used to it, Hawthorne, but you know that.
He looks around. It's possible that we're being monitored, and he knows it.
I'm in, you know, he whispers, for everything.
My eyebrows rise in surprise.
Everything?
Whatever you want, Roselle. I'll fight for it. For you. He reaches out and covers my hand with his. He squeezes, and I grind my teeth so I don't sob.
I need you to put together a list of candidates for Heritage Council positions, and a list of who currently fills them, I tell him.
I don't care about rank and privilege. I want smart people, not entitled ones. I want interfate advisors, not just swords. To start with, I want you to focus on finding the most innovative stars and atoms. I'm looking for forensic investigators not affiliated with Census. And I need a list of all census holdings, maps of bases, lists of personnel, budget reports. I want to know where Census allocates its assets.
He frowns and begins to take notes on his moniker.
I stop him with a hand on his sleeve.
We can't use monikers to communicate or to do research. I need you to devise another form of communication. Census is inside most of our systems.
What other form of communication? He asks, grinning. carrier pigeons? I sigh. Write it down if you have to, but burn it when you're done. We no longer use monikers for anything. Do you understand? Yeah, I got it, Hawthorne replies. Before Gabriel died, he warned me about my mother, I continue. He said too many zeros. Do you have any idea what that could mean? Zeros? Hawthorne holds his hand to his forehead. I heard him say something like it before, but only in drug-induced ramblings about freedom and free will. None of what he said before I left made any sense. What about census? I ask. Hawthorne drops his hand. I haven't been back to Swords. Your mother wants me dead. Reports from my friends tell me census is everywhere in Swords now, like they own the place. I think they do, Hawthorne. I think they're Othala's allies. I lean forward and put my elbows on my knees, holding my chin in my hands. I stare at his eyes. They're cloudy. He must be as tired as I am. What do you plan to do about that? Hawthorne asks. He's as close as he can be without touching me. I don't know yet. I scrub my face with my hands, trying to think. Census is entrenched everywhere that secondborn swords are. They're the roots of every tree on every base. They control our monikers. They have access to our communications. They have a stranglehold on every fate, not just swords. The advantage is theirs. We have to take out their leaders. We don't know who they are, Hawthorne says. Census acts like every one of them is a leader. Census has leaders, I insist. Or you never would have gotten me away from Agent Crow when I was his prisoner. He answers to someone higher up, or he would never have let me go. There's a faraway look in Hawthorne's eyes, and I wonder if he's thinking of Agnes and what Agent Crow did to her for helping me. I reach my hand out and tangle Hawthorne's fingers in mine. Remember when I promised you that I'd help you kill Agent Crow and avenge Agnes when the time was right? Yes, he replies. The time is now, Hawthorne. Chapter 18. Planning My Crash Landing. No funeral or memorial is planned for Balmora. The official cause of her death is ruled an accidental drowning. Her body is incinerated within hours of the pronouncement, and her ashes disposed of. The cover-up of my brother's drug overdose is a much more elaborate conspiracy. The Virtue pushes it forward with the same swift efficiency and whitewash as his daughter's death. Gabriel's corpse is loaded into an exquisite aircraft, and an accident is staged so that it looks as if a tragic malfunction occurred near his estate in Lenity. The fiery crash, with Gabriel's body inside, is executed with the utmost care. By nightfall, it's reported on by every diamond-fated media outlet the world over. When the flames die down, there's very little left to send to Othala for burial. The speed with which this all happens is significant. This way, there's no chance of Othala getting Gabriel's body back and making accusations against me or the Virtue that could be medically corroborated. The Virtue has no intention of letting me return to Swords for a memorial either. Instead, an official announcement states that, in light of the tragic circumstances surrounding my father's memorial in Swords, a small private ceremony will be held at the Halo Palace, which means there won't be one. It's almost midnight by the time I'm released from the Virtue's presence. I'm shown to my new quarters by a member of his staff. My new suite befits my stature as firstborn. Decadently appointed in shades of gold, it's excessive to the point of gaudiness. My footsteps echo against the high ceiling in the drawing room. Projections of the cosmos play upon its lofty heights, but I can change the image to whatever I want, from storm clouds to a sun-filled sky. One arching glass wall affords a view of the sea. Dismissing my new secondborn staff, I walk to the window, staring at the moon shining on the water. How are you? Raken asks from behind me. Startled, my pulse speeds up. I want it to be because I wasn't expecting him, but my heart thumps more from a combination of his deep voice and his extremely handsome appearance in tailored dinner attire. I didn't know you were here. He comes closer. Quincy's here too, sleeping in one of your unoccupied bedrooms with Rogue. I've been keeping an eye on her. She's taking the events of today very hard. I think she loved Balmora. As for how I'm doing, the answer is, I don't know. I reply truthfully. My emotional self-awareness shut down hours ago. Now I'm simply numb. Where's Dune? Strategy meeting with his brothers. My eyes flare with alarm. I look around at the opulent furnishings, any number of which could be spying devices. Don't worry, he reassures me. I've secured the room. No one will overhear us. Where's Phoenix? I ask. You want me to get your mechadome? Of course, I reply. It's part of my... I was going to say family, but I don't want to sound crazy. Why are you here? I ask instead. His eyebrows rise. I sigh and rub my forehead. I didn't mean it like that. I'm just surprised they let you in here. Did you sneak in? I didn't have to sneak. You're firstborn now. You can do whatever you want. Entertain whomever you'd like, whenever you'd like. But I am here on official Halo Palace business. Oh? The Virtue and the other Clarities are planning to present you to the world as the heir to the Fate of Swords tomorrow night at the Secondborn Trial's opening ceremonies. Why would they do that? It's too soon. My brother just died. In everyone's eyes, Roselle, you're still Secondborn, and that's a problem. The Virtue and the aligned heads of the Fates need to change your narrative, and quickly, if you're to overcome your mother's perceived authority as the Sword. They're out of time, so it's going to happen now. What are they expecting me to do? They want a new opportunity to showcase your mastery in the realm of warfare. It's something your mother doesn't have, and you excel at it. Grisham suggested to his father that you and I give a display of your skill at the ceremony tomorrow. I'm sorry, what? I rub my forehead. They want us to mock duel. He says it softly, like I might explode if he's too loud. I shake my head in disbelief. They want us to fight each other? Mock duel, like we always do. An exhibition with fusion blades, to show your skill. And you agreed to this? I teeter between amazement and derision. Fighting with a sword is not the same as mastery in the realm of warfare. I agreed to be your sparring partner because I'm not going to allow someone else near you with a sword, Raken insists. Especially not a sword soldier. You know how insane this is, right? There should be a period of mourning for Gabriel. He frowns. Like I said, there's no time for that. Listen, I know you're grieving. I know you wanted things to be different with your brother. And I know you got exactly what you wanted. I reply with a total lack of emotion. I have no energy left. I did, he admits. But I am sorry that it hurts you. I can't talk about this right now, Raken. I just need a moment of peace. Is that too much to ask? No, he replies with an air of contrition. It's not too much to ask. Good night. I turn and walk to my bedroom. Closing the door, I lie on the bed and cover my face with a pillow so no one will hear my sobbing. No matter what I say or do, I won't be able to avoid attending the Secondborn Trials. The realization gives me no small amount of anxiety. I walk the open-air corridor of the rooftop cloister, listening to Clifton Salloway give our Supreme Leader a status report regarding the security measures he's directly overseeing. The picturesque cloister, built atop the floating halo, shades us from the bright sunlight. The pace Bowie sets is brisk. He walks beneath the barrel-vaulted ceiling at such a clip that the other members of Fabian's Council of Destiny fall behind, holding their sides as we make another lap. The virtue